it here, and I know we're going to have fun.
Okay.
All right. We're ready.
All right. Hello, and welcome to another exciting NABBW teleseminar. In a moment, I will introduce today's guests, E.L., Betsy Smith, and Diane Hawkins, and this evening's topic, the match game, Where Do You Volunteer? But first, let me... I lost my place here on my screen. Let me introduce myself and set the stage. I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com. And we also have a forum at www.boomerwomenspeak.com. We're delighted that our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords Baby Boomer Women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, we welcome you to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW site. It's in the upper right-hand corner, which you can use to join. This call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide to our members. We have recordings of approximately 90 past teleseminars, which are yours with membership in NABBW. You won't see them on the site unless you're a member, however, as we keep them in our members-only area. Now, let's talk a little bit about the format of the call this evening. I hope you'll get yourself comfortable and make sure that in addition to have something to drink so you don't have to run off and get a drink because, you know, I am always trying to keep hydrated. You should also have paper and pencil handy, and be sure that you've downloaded the worksheet we provided on the sign-up page so that you can follow along. Betsy and Diane will be sharing some great information here tonight, and the worksheet will help you follow along and take notes. For the next 30 minutes or so, I'll have the phone lines muted, and I will be talking with our guests. After that, I will open the lines for questions from the audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, use the box on your computer screen to type in your questions. I'll see them as they come in and relay them to Betsy and Diane. So given that introduction of how it's going to work here, let's get started. I am delighted to reintroduce our guest, Betsy, and introduce Diane Hawkins. Betsy is co-author of the award-winning book, Second Blooming for Women, Growing a Life That Matters After 50, and Diane is Second Blooming's marketing director. Their website, www.secondbloomingforwomen.com, and that's with all words spelled out, is devoted to helping women over 50 answer three crucial questions. Am I making a difference? Does my life matter? What do I want to do with the rest of my life? This evening, they will be discussing tonight's crucially important topic, the match game, Where Do You Volunteer? Before her second blooming, Betsy worked in higher education as a dean, provost, and vice president. During that time, she also served as a volunteer and managed volunteers. She supervised the foundation at her college and launched the first ever fundraising campaign, which involved hundreds of volunteers. Her volunteer service includes serving as the president of the Pensacola Symphony, president of Leadership Pensacola, and president of Cordova Rotary. She served on the boards of the Council on Aging and the Lung Association in Pensacola and is a proud Texas Aggie. Her mantra is, "Be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid," which I do believe also applies to volunteering. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Diane. In addition to her professional marketing career, Diane has 35 years of community volunteer experience. She is a 20-year Red Cross disaster volunteer responding to natural and man-made disasters throughout the country. Diane has volunteered on PTA and Girl Scout boards and during national and local political campaigns. She is a past Red Cross Volunteer Board of Directors President, past Association of Fundraising Professionals President, board member of the Hawkshaw Missing Children's Memorial in Florida, and served as a United Way campaign volunteer. She currently leads a community volunteer board for the Arthritis Foundation. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Now, Diane. Oh, you're welcome. Now, Diane and Betsy, it's clear as I read all of this that you are busy women. Your resumes would still be impressive even if you hadn't given your time as a volunteer. So before I launch into my questions, why don't I give you a brief opportunity to say something about why you've always made time for this sort of work?
Okay, and this is Betsy, and I will start. And one, I've always given time for volunteer work because I feel it is part of my responsibility to give back to my community, whatever community I'm living in. Diane and Kathleen and I met each other when I lived in Pensacola, Florida. I'm now up in North Carolina. But I love that feeling of giving back to the community. And in part of that giving back, I meet people I might never meet in any other way. I learn about things I might not know in any other way. So volunteering has always, one, been important for me to volunteer, but just as importantly, I supervised volunteers. And the joy that comes from people doing just what I talked about, giving back to the community, is priceless. Diane?
Well, I have very similar feelings about volunteering and the reasons I volunteer. And one of them, again, is giving back to the community. My husband was in the military for 23 years, so we had the opportunity to travel and live all over. And each community has a different need. And when you have children growing up, sometimes you focus on volunteering where your children go to school and the activities that they're in. But also the community and the times create different volunteer activities for you. And I've always kind of jumped in there wherever we've lived and decided this is really worthwhile for me to be involved in this at this time of my life. And for me, it's always been very rewarding. There are a lot of surveys out there that show people get more fulfilled by their volunteer positions than they do by their paid positions and their careers. And I have to agree with that wholeheartedly from my perspective.
Excellent. Well, thank you for those comments. I would say that whatever our reasons, volunteering can be one of the most positive things we can ever do, but it is a time and financial commitment, and because of that, it's not something that we should take on lightly. In fact, recently I was talking to someone who told me that she had been such a committed volunteer to so many things that she had to file for bankruptcy. So obviously it's something that we have to make a balance in our lives and understand that there is a commitment to volunteering. So let's start our discussion by covering a few of the questions that we all need to think about before we volunteer. And I guess you've alluded to this a little bit, so let's start with the question of why should I volunteer or why should anyone volunteer?
Well, I think for us second bloomers, there are a couple of reasons to volunteer. One, and I teach a class on second blooming, and we usually have about 15 women who are in their late 50s to 65 that take that class. And I remember one of them who came into the class, and she was scowling, and her arms were crossed, and she sat down, and we went through the obligatory, so tell me about yourself, and she said, I just retired. I moved down here. I don't know who I am. I don't know what to do. Every morning I wake up and I think, so why am I waking up? I don't have a job anymore. And my class was only 4 weeks long. But by the end of the class, she had gone to a volunteer fair. She had decided two agencies she was interested in volunteering for because they spoke to her passion, and we did a follow-up once a month meeting with that class, and she became very involved in one of those volunteer organizations. So, you know, we are past that stereotype of sitting on the front porch rocking, because we're the first population of women who have 40 years ahead of us. So we want to make those years productive. And we want those years to be years that we do what we choose. And volunteering really gives you the opportunity to say, you know, I always wanted to work with the Humane Society. I love the natural park, the national parks. I would really like to do something with that. So they're, from my perspective, one, it gives you a sense of purpose. Two, it serves a purpose for the organizations. And you never know what might turn into a volunteer opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Diane?
Well, I think there are a lot of openings for volunteer opportunities in any community. Some, you should be volunteering for the reasons that you want to do something, you want to feel fulfilled, you want to look forward to going to that volunteer position every day, whether you go every day or you go once a week or you do 1 hour a week. And volunteering is what makes most of these agencies keep their doors open. If you don't have the funding and you don't have the volunteering, that particular organization or agency, in most cases, would not be able to provide the services to the community that their mission says they will provide.
Good points. Excellent. Thank you. Now, let me move on to my next question is, why should we think ahead of time about where to volunteer? Wouldn't you, many of us might think that all opportunities are worthwhile opportunities, and so it would seem like that it would just be a matter of pick one and go with it.
Yes, all volunteer opportunities are worthwhile, but you need to choose those that are meaningful to you. Let's look at four things that I consider you should be doing ahead of time. Number one, do you have an affinity for that organization? For example, were your kids involved in Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts? And was it a good experience for them and for you? Were you active in Scouts or your church youth group when you were young? And number two, do your homework. Most nonprofits have websites where you can familiarize yourself with that organization or agency's mission, its structure, and they usually list the volunteer opportunities on their website. And number three, do you have a family member or a friend who is a volunteer or are benefiting from a service from a particular organization? Talk to them about their impressions of that group. They can probably give you a lot of valuable information because they are involved in one way or another. And four, I think a big question is that you should ask yourself is, am I willing to make changes in my life to include a volunteer job? I would like to talk for a minute about the recent tornadoes. We've all seen the devastation and the heartbreak that they can cause. Everyone wants to help in some way. Before you would pick up the phone and call a disaster response agency, such as the Red Cross, and offer to physically go help, there are some things you really need to consider. First, if you don't live in the affected communities, agencies such as the Red Cross will first really need to register you as a volunteer and train you in the different disaster response functions before they would deploy you to a disaster in another community. If you do live in the affected community or in a neighboring area, you could volunteer at your closest Red Cross office as a spontaneous volunteer where you would not need a lot of training, but you could certainly help support the disaster victims in or near where you live by working in that office. And a lot of times you shadow or partner with a trained volunteer in that area. Now, if you would decide to be a disaster volunteer on a regular basis, there are some things to think about. You will need to be prepared to see the scope of the devastation in person. And believe me, it's much worse viewing a disaster 360 degrees versus on the TV. You'll mm-hmm. be living under hardship conditions while volunteering at a disaster, which means you might not, you might be living in a gym with 100 other volunteers and you get a 2-minute shower and you might be eating MREs rather than hot meals every day prepared in the kitchen. And of course, you'll hear and witness firsthand, continuous survivor and loss stories. You would be putting your personal life on hold for a few weeks if you decided to be a disaster volunteer and deploy to other communities. So what I'm saying is this is not a volunteer job for everyone. If you think you're not physically or emotionally prepared to cope with those kinds of conditions, then this may not be a good match for you. However, agencies such as the Red Cross have many other non-disaster volunteer opportunities for you. So, yes, there are a lot of great opportunities out there, but thinking ahead and taking some of the steps that I mentioned to kind of check out those agencies will really help you in the right move in the right direction so that you really become a very good match.
I think that's a really good point that you bring up there, Diane. It makes me think about the fact that my son is a professional photographer, and he was on the scene with the photographers that were taking part in Katrina, and as a result of being a photographer, he actually helped rescue people because he was going out there with the people that were working to take the pictures, and so he got involved and ended up, one of his favorite stories is how he saved a whole bunch of nuns, and they told him that when he dies, he will be going to heaven because of the fact that he saved the nuns. But he also told me that he was shooting the disaster in Katrina with people that were seasoned photographers who go all over the world shooting disasters, and he saw that some of these photographers were reduced to tears just because they were so used to going out of the country to see this terrible stuff, and to see it inside our own country was just something that was emotionally taking a huge toll on them. So I think those were some really excellent points that you made about I think my son really enjoyed the saving of the people, but it was still a huge emotional toll to be down there during that disaster. And so I agree with you that it might be better to be working behind the scenes if you're not sure that that's something that personally you could handle. But I didn't mean to take up so much time with my little story. It's just that as you were telling it, I was thinking, I remember so much my son talking about the impact that being there had on those people that just thought they were there to take pictures of it. So now you talked a little bit, I think, about looking for a return on the investment, looking for a good return on your investment of your volunteer time. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Sure.
And before Diane starts with that, I would like to interject that volunteering, like everything else in this world, has a broad spectrum. And a Red Cross volunteer who volunteers to go to those disaster areas, and Diane and Kathleen and I all lived in Pensacola when Hurricane Ivan came, and that was our Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
We understand the trauma that is. And the Red Cross volunteers and the FEMA volunteers and every other volunteer who came were so important to us. But volunteering, there's a great spectrum. You might volunteer at your church. You might volunteer with the Girl Scout cookie sales. You might volunteer... one of my students volunteered with the adoption agency. The volunteer spectrum is huge, from a little bit to really involved. And because we second bloomers, after 50, get to choose what we're going to do, we can choose which one. What part of that spectrum do we want to be involved with?
Mm-hmm.
And we all bring so much life experiences to the different volunteer opportunities that are out there for us. And it's a great value. The older volunteer, I think, is a great value to organizations, more so than a younger volunteer, because, number one, they may have a lot more experiences to pull from, and, number two, they're probably available during hours that maybe younger people can't volunteer. They have a job or they have classes. So I think the volunteers in our age group are critical to any organization because they become the backbone of the volunteers. And, of course, they can share all of their life's experiences with the younger volunteers who haven't reached that point yet. So it's a great opportunity. You can become a mentor to younger volunteers as well.
Excellent. What type of experiences would you – let's talk a little bit more about that mentoring of younger volunteers. Do you have more things that you could share about that?
I think, Betsy, you probably have a lot of good input on that as well.
In my career at a very large community college, part of what we wanted to infuse into the students was that sense of community service, that sense of giving back. And a lot of the student organizations would work on Relay for Life, or they would work with the Red Cross, or they would go down to the soup kitchen and prepare breakfast for people. And they would get college credit for that because we really believed in community service was an important part of what we were teaching the students. And let me tell you, in a community college, the students aren't all 18. There are many of them who are in their 30s and 40s. But having good mentors in those volunteer organizations was important to the students to learn why is this important and what difference does this make and what am I getting out of this? What am I learning from this? So from the university or community college perspective, the mentoring of seasoned volunteers was very important to us.
Okay, excellent. Now, when you talk about what am I getting out of this, I think that equates to my earlier question about the return on investment. So what type of getting out of it or what type of return on your investment of your time and talents should a person look for, would you say, in choosing what to volunteer for?
Well, after you've made a decision to volunteer at an organization, and you've had an orientation and a tour of the facility and met the staff and fellow volunteers, you're settling into your volunteer schedule after that. Your honeymoon period could be very short or it could be very long, but at some point, I think you want to do a self-assessment of the investment of my time and energy and ask yourself some questions. Do I feel that I'm being appreciated? Is my donation of time acknowledged here? And do I feel like I'm making a positive difference in what I do here? And does the organization provide me with the tools that I need to be an effective volunteer? That may be some classes, some training, some mentoring with seasoned volunteers there. If your answer is no to those questions, this organization might not really be a good investment of your time, and you could seek out other volunteer opportunities elsewhere. However, I think if you really enjoy the organization, you might want to talk to the volunteer coordinator about your concerns and see if anything could be changed for the better because, you know, you want to stay and you want to work there. But some of those things just don't make you feel warm and fuzzy. You know, no one's really making you feel appreciated, and or maybe you don't feel that you're making a difference with what you're doing. Possibly you could be moved to some other volunteer job within the organization where you would be a better match. Not all volunteer jobs are perfect, but you really need to be the judge of your own time spent supporting any organization.
I would certainly agree with that. Yes,
let me talk from another perspective, and that is from my perspective of president of the Pensacola Symphony Orchestra Board. And that board was passionate about music. It was passionate about bringing music into the community. It was passionate about having children come to the symphony who might not, through any other way, ever hear a symphonic orchestra. Volunteering for the symphony board was a different kind of volunteering. It was, you were expected to invest, and that means donate to the board, to the symphony, at a pretty significant level. You were expected to help with the capital campaign, which is raising money, which a lot of volunteer organizations expect the board members to do. You were expected to attend the concerts and to greet the participants. That's a, in my perspective, that's a different kind of volunteering than volunteering to go to Katrina or volunteering to go to Joplin, Missouri. It's no less worthwhile, but I would like for us to look at the various kinds of volunteer opportunities that we have, and that if your passion is classical music, find a way to volunteer with your local organization that provides classical music to your community. If your passion is first aid and wanting to be there to help, then find that organization. There are hundreds of nonprofit organizations that need and appreciate volunteers. So volunteering is from one to the next. It's a huge opportunity for second bloomers, for baby boomers.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So then you would say that the return on the investment of your time and talent is going to vary depending on what type of a volunteer situation it is. And I heard you saying there that with the symphony, that it's not just a donation of time and talent, but it sounds like it's also a monetary expectation there as well.
That's right. In Pensacola, we also used to have a golf tournament that was on the seniors tour. And I volunteered for years to work at that golf tournament. And, of course, they gave money back to many of the nonprofits in the community, but I volunteered there because I loved golf, because I knew those golfers, and I wanted to be part of that rather than just attending the golf tournament and watching. I wanted to be part of what made that happen.
Okay. So I think what I'm hearing you say is that it's important to know your values and your vision and what your passions are and even your purpose before you choose an organization to commit yourself with, because that way there will be a synergy that develops as a result.
Right. So you'll have fun. You'll be committed. You'll be productive. And the organization will appreciate you, and you will use your talent.
Excellent. What would you say that would be questions that a person should ask before making this commitment? Because, you know, I did find myself at a time when I didn't have the financial wherewithal. I was doing work for a museum, and I was doing marketing work for a museum where they paid me to market for them, but then they asked me to volunteer to be on the committee that was for fundraising, and I was happy to volunteer on the committee because we had a huge capital campaign going on, but I was naive and I had no idea that volunteering, agreeing to put in my time to make calls to people to raise money for the capital campaign, I did not understand before I got involved in it that they were going to say, and Anne, you have to ante up some money in this as well. That was a big surprise for me. So perhaps there should be questions that we need to ask of the organization before we commit ourselves, and probably questions that we have to ask ourselves as well.
Right, and Diane might, if you don't mind, Diane, if you could respond to that, and what's required to be an effective volunteer? Do I have to go to meetings? Do I have to raise money? Do I have to, or how do I know what's expected of me to be a volunteer?
Sure. I think an organization should provide you with the tools you need to be an effective volunteer. And one of the first things I would do is ask for a volunteer job description, or at least a list of what your responsibilities will be. For example, Betsy talked about being on a board. You will want to know some things up front. Is there an orientation session? You really can't be a good ambassador for any organization and its mission if you don't know how it's set up to deliver the services to your community. So that's usually covered in an orientation. Again, how many meetings am I expected to attend, and when are they? If the monthly meetings are on the third Thursday of the month and you have a commitment about the same time or around the same time, you really shouldn't commit to volunteer at this organization, and if that's going to be a conflict for you with something you are already committed to. And also, a lot of people get recruited for different positions on either a board or on a committee because of the experience and training that they have. But maybe you want to do something that's totally different from your experience. Most people in the financial field seem to end up being a board or committee treasurer because they like to do numbers, and that's great. But I was on a board where we recruited a gentleman from a bank, and he said he just wanted to go out and get sponsors for special events. He did not aspire to be a treasurer on the board. And that was great because he told us up front what he wanted, and we were able to focus on recruiting a board member to put in the pipeline to become treasurer for the board a few years down the line. So again, you know, one of the questions is, am I expected to pledge a financial gift in addition to my time? And Betsy talked about that on the symphony. To my way of thinking, if you want to be a volunteer, you volunteer your time. If you want to be a donor, then you write checks. Most organizations, when they recruit people to be on their board, they become a donor and a volunteer. So if you're not willing to step up to be prepared to do both of those in a board position, then maybe you just want to be simply a volunteer. Again, asking all these questions up front and getting a job responsibility list before you commit is a very good way to keep from being embarrassed in the future, like maybe I need to back out because I cannot fulfill the financial obligations that go on with the job. You know, you listed it on mm-hmm. my list of responsibilities being a board member, but, oh, boy, things are really tight, and maybe I should just back off and serve on one of the committees and give up my board position to someone else who can make a financial gift. Also, I think it's very important if you commit to be a board member with an organization that you attend the meetings. If you cannot attend meetings, you cannot get a quorum. If you can't get a quorum, you can't vote for different items on the agenda, and the organization can't go forward. So please consider that before you entertain accepting a board position. It sounds great to say, oh, someone has recruited me to be on this board or that board in the community, but if you don't know up front what all the commitments are, you're not going to be a very effective board member. So you might just want to volunteer for the organization instead and give your time as you have time to give. So those are some considerations to think about with regard to requirements for being an effective volunteer.
Excellent. Now, that from talking about that, I'm going to lead us into what seems to be the next point that we should probably talk about is, what are the consequences of a poor match between me and the place where I might choose to volunteer? I think you've alluded a little bit to that. One consequence would be that I should get off the board and just become a volunteer, but I'm sure that there must be other consequences that we should consider.
And I just want to jump in before Diane answers this to really make sure that we understand. Volunteering to be on a board is one thing, but just a volunteer is just as important as being a board member. And it's just, where do you want to serve? And where can you financially serve? But the volunteers who make the events happen, who go to the places where there is a natural disaster, those volunteers are every bit as important as the board members who can afford to invest in whatever that organization is.
A poor volunteer match is the same as a poor job match. If you don't look forward to going to your volunteer position, it's going to reflect in your performance. There could be many reasons the match isn't what you hoped it would be, but if you're unhappy, you'll really want to assess what those reasons are and decide what action you might want to take. If you're counted on to do a specific job and you just decide to call in sick, or even worse, don't show up at all, you really could be creating a void or a break in the services that could affect a large group of people that rely on that charity to meet their needs. So it's very important that, you know, if you're not happy there and you feel it's a poor match, please talk to someone there at the agency and possibly see if you can be moved to another function in volunteering. Just as Betsy said, a board may not be the place for you, but volunteering in another part of that agency or organization is also very important. And as I said earlier, if you don't have the volunteers and the funding, then the organization cannot fulfill its mission on delivering usually very critical and important services to a particular group in a community.
Mm-hmm. All right. So perhaps then we should get to the situation of going back to my situation where I had been working with as part of the ad agency that worked with this museum, and then I was invited to be on this committee for the capital campaign, and then I discovered that they were really looking for me to invest, you know, like maybe $20,000 into my share of this. And as a simple employee of an ad agency, I didn't have that kind of funds, so it was a kind of an embarrassing situation. So you alluded to the situation earlier, you know, of finding yourself in an embarrassing situation. So how does one respectfully decline an invitation if we realize that it's not a good match for us?
When we get into our second half of life, which is, of course, the time of our life, we get to choose what we're going to do. And I think before you make the decision about if you're going to accept or decline, you want to ask some questions of that organization. And I would suggest that although we are honored when organizations ask us to serve on the board or serve on a volunteer committee or serve on the capital campaign, I strongly recommend that when that ask comes to you, you say, let me think about that for a day. And you spend that day outlining the questions you want to ask them. How long has this organization been in existence? What is exactly expected of me? How much time am I going to have to spend? Do you see this part of the volunteer organization being working with people, or are you looking for someone to make cold calls on the phone? Or tell me exactly what you want from me, because like in so many organizations, they are so used to this. It is so much their routine. It is what they do every day. Unfortunately, they may forget to tell you those details, like your arts council forgot to say, oh, and by the way, your expectation is this kind of donation every year or for this year or whatever. So you want to be very forthcoming to think through the questions. And how do you respectfully decline an invitation? Well, here's one way. At the first of every year, I make a decision about what organization am I going to work with that year. And when I make that decision, that means that's the organization I'm going to donate to work with, and that's my organization. So when, like, for example, say the Red Cross is my organization this year. So when the Cancer Society and the Diabetes Society and the Arthritis Foundation and the Natural Science Museum calls me, because once you get into volunteering and you stay in a community, then people know you're willing to volunteer. So when everybody else calls me, I can say, you know, this year my organization is the Red Cross. And I really loved working with the Lung Association last year, and I'm not sure what I'll do next year, but this year I'm giving my time, my talent, and my money to the American Red Cross. So make that decision and have that ready so that you don't have to say, well, let me think about it. Because, you know, if you've had one fun run success, then every organization wants you to be their fun run coordinator. And you want to do that because you're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But by making that decision early and really giving your time, your talent, your money to one organization every year, then you don't have to feel like you're saying no to other people or that you're saying no, but there's a reason. So be prepared. Make your choices. You know, being a second bloomer is all about getting to choose. You get to choose what you want to do.
That's very excellent points that you make there. I think that in my personal experience, an awful lot of the volunteer work that I've done has been something that I kind of fell into, whereas you said something really crucial, Betsy, which was that at the beginning of each year, you make a decision who you're going to choose to work with for this year. So it almost sounds like part of your resolutions for the year is a time that time when you're working on your resolutions, part of that is you are choosing who you want to work with.
Yeah.
Did I hear you correctly on that?
That's absolutely right. And, of course, I have a story about choosing. I was very involved in the First Methodist Church in Pensacola for a long time. And I, because I am who I am, they came to me and said, we'd love for you to be on the wedding committee. And I looked at them and said, I'd rather have a stick in the eye than be on the wedding committee. Now, that's me, because that's like what I'm, but I would love to be an usher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were no women ushers at First Methodist Church in Pensacola, Florida, when I said I would love to be an usher. But, you know, I was the first one. And it always has to be that first one. And you don't have to be as bold as I am. But you get to choose. You get to say no. No, I don't want to do that. But, you know, I've always wanted to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that story. So so how many women ushers do they have these days?
Well, you know, I've not been there for a while, but they've
okay.
got several. They've got several. Yeah.
All right. So you blazed a path there. That's a fun story. Let's talk a little bit more about the requirements for anyone to be an effective volunteer. I think that Diane talked a little bit about this. She mentioned, I believe it was Diane who mentioned, you know, that there's meetings, responsibilities, training. But let's spend a little bit more time talking about the requirements, because I think knowing those requirements can help us to make a decision as to where we might volunteer.
Well, again, I think it's very important to ask questions up front and, again, look at a job description or a list of your responsibilities. most organizations now are coming along with providing everything online. So you might be able to go to websites and find out what the different job descriptions are for the different volunteer positions and exactly what's required. For example, one could be a historian for an organization. Well, that might mean going into their archives and organizing their photos and their memorabilia and cataloging them and possibly taking pictures of them and putting them on their website or putting them in a display case in the lobby of the organization. So you can find different jobs in different within one organization. The Red Cross, for example, I can tell you has many volunteer positions. They have disaster response positions. They have health and safety positions such as assisting with health fairs, you know, just going to a health fair and being at a booth and representing the organization, or teaching first aid or CPR life-saving courses, or working with the military. The Red Cross is chartered by the government to provide emergency messages to the military who are deployed around the world from their families back home. So there are a variety of positions with just in that organization alone that you should be able to go into your local Red Cross office and either check on their, a lot of them have a little book there that lists all the different volunteer positions, the hours, maybe 3 hours a week or one day a week, and find out what your niche is and what you really can get your arms around and be a very effective volunteer in that particular position. And again, you can always change positions once you're in the organization if you feel that, again, it's not a good match for you.
Excellent.
And I was at a luncheon today, and I was a speaker, and afterwards a lady came up to me, and she was the executive director of the radio reading services here up in the Raleigh area of North Carolina. And I was talking about leadership, and she came up to me to say, you know, I realize I am the leader of these volunteers, and she said, I have a pretty rigorous interview process that I put volunteers through. And one of her volunteers was with her, and she said, yes, but when we finished, I knew exactly what was expected from me. And the executive director said, and I knew she would fit with the culture of our organization.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about volunteering and there is not some kind of interview process or orientation, I strongly recommend you look closer at that organization, because you're going to have to ask questions. What is expected of me? How many hours? What do you need? What do you want? Why me? What do I bring to this that you think would work?
Okay. Well, I've got a question kind of related to that, Betsy, and I'm asking you because of the fact that you've been, you know, managing volunteers and from that point of view. How do you think an organization does typically respond or should respond if someone comes to them with an offer to volunteer in an area where they've never had a volunteer in the past? For example, being as my husband and I have for 20 years or so been involved with web designing, I remember early on, 20-some years ago, when nobody ever heard of a website yet, my husband came up with the idea that he wanted to create a website for Convention and Visitors Bureau in a community that we had a vacation home in. It was a community that he loved, and he wanted to help them get more tourism by building a website for them. But of course, he had to start out with the concept of what is a website, because it was so new. So, what is typically obviously, technology goes on and into the future. Websites are old hat. Now everybody knows what a website is. But there's certainly going to be things that evolve as life goes forward that a volunteer management organization is potentially going to run into a situation where someone wants to volunteer for something where there isn't a position, there isn't a job description. How is it typically going to be received when someone comes and says, I want to volunteer doing something that's never been done before?
Well, I would love to give you my initial response, and then I would love for Diane to follow on to this. And my initial response is it all depends on the organizational culture.
Mm-hmm.
If the executive director and the board president are innovators, and if they want to move forward, someone comes forward and says, I have this unique idea that not many people have heard about it, they may very well say, good idea. Now, if the board, if the executive director and the board president are not so innovative, if they're very comfortable with how we've always done it, then they won't be so receptive. And it's the same way with innovators and organizations everywhere. You just got to find the right match.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Diane?
Yes, I think if you have wonderful ideas where you think you can move them forward, it might just be one small shift in their volunteer program that you've experienced there or in other organizations where you volunteered, just recommending some new ideas, again, as Betsy said, could be well received or could not be well received because they like things the way they are right now. But to volunteer new ideas, that shows that you probably have a very a good passion for the work that's being done at that organization, and you want to see things move forward and possibly make some changes. Now, on the other hand, some organizations have so many rules from their national headquarters that a lot of the local affiliates of those organizations are handcuffed in some ways, that they can't make very large changes without taking it through the change of command, or the chain of command, excuse me, that goes all the way up to the top level. I have experience doing that from the local chapter of the Red Cross, where I kind of moved things up through the channels up to national headquarters, and a few things were reviewed, and one of the recommendations that I made changed across the country on the way the Red Cross dealt with the particular fundraising issue. So it doesn't hurt to come up with a plan, and especially if you go to an organization and you volunteer and you see something that you think you can improve upon or you don't like the way it's being handled or managed at this point, I think if you're going to go into someone's office and complain about something, take them a solution. And don't just come in and bellyache about your volunteer position or the way things are being done. Take specifics, but also take in specific recommendations and thoughts you have on how it can be improved or move forward or make things a little bit better for the organization as a whole.
Excellent. I guess one question that wraps up from that topic is, how do I recognize when I've made the right choice with my volunteer organization?
Well, again, I think if you have a family member or a friend who has received wonderful services from an organization, that might be the organization that you want to join and be part of it, because you've seen the services that have been given out to a family member or a friend. In my Red Cross experience, a good number of the Red Cross millions of volunteers across the country have been past recipients of Red Cross services. And I'm a perfect example of that. When I was a teenager, I took the Red Cross junior and senior life-saving courses. And without those certifications, I would not have been able to get my first real job as a lifeguard at the community pool. Mm-hmm. And then later, as an adult, my husband deployed overseas with the military when I was pregnant, twice as a matter of fact. And the Red Cross is the organization chartered by Congress to send emergency messages to deployed military, such as the birth of the baby or the death of a family member. So mm-hmm. the Red Cross sent my husband a message on his ship each time telling him that he was a new dad. So mm-hmm. those are some of the reasons that I think I made the right choice for me and became a Red Cross volunteer. I did want to give back. Now, there are some volunteer jobs that are just for a specific occasion, such as a fundraising event or a political campaign. Those kinds of events, you'll pretty much know specifically an end date for your time to volunteer because the campaign is over, or the election has concluded, or the ball has completed its activities and mm-hmm. everybody is going home. So if a campaign or a single event was a good experience for you, then you might want to volunteer for more in the future with that organization, or maybe just be a volunteer for special events for different organizations in your community. Now, when do you know when it's time to leave? Well, you may decide to move on when you feel you're no longer making a difference or you no longer look forward to volunteering. And as we said earlier, that there could be a variety of reasons for that. And another deciding factor in when it's time to leave is when there are changes in your life. You may now be the caretaker for an aging parent, or you have a new grandchild that lives out of town and you want to visit on a regular basis and spend time with your grandchild. Whatever the reasons are for you to decide to leave, the important thing is that you give the organization as much notice as possible so that they can recruit and train another volunteer to fill your position in the future.
That makes sense. I understand that. There's always a time to join and a time to leave. Now, would you say that there's a limit to how many activities a person can participate in effectively? It sounds like Betsy chooses one organization to participate in a year, but then if you're participating in some of these short-term projects like the run or the campaign, you know, you might get yourself involved in more than one at a time. So because you all know that they're going to have different end dates, but their interim times may coincide. So. I when I mentioned at the top of the call about the woman who got herself into a situation where she was facing bankruptcy because she was doing too much volunteering, she has too many causes that she was giving time to. I obviously that would be a case where she should have been more judicious and selected only fewer or only one of them. But let's get to is there a limit? Let's just get to that. I'm talking so much and not letting you answer.
I would say yes, there is a limit, and every person's limit is different. Like I said, I choose to, at the first of the year, decide what I'm going to invest my time, talent, and money in. But if I were an events person, I might choose to do four events for four different organizations. And, you know, and every time we have one of these teleseminars, I'm always talking about choosing. You get to choose. You know best. Unfortunately, the lady who was so magnanimous she put herself at risk didn't choose wisely.
Mm-hmm.
But I recommend that you look at your life, your total life, how many times are you going to travel, how many times are your grandchildren here, are you going to, what are your responsibilities there, how many times do you whatever else is going into your life, and really schedule your volunteer or opportunities and obligations like you schedule getting your hair done and getting your toes done and going to church and visiting the grandchildren. Choose. Look at the big picture, choose, and make wise choices.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking at my time here, and I'm realizing that we're at the top of the hour already, so we've had some wonderful discussion here. I normally would open up the call and let listeners have a chance to ask questions, but we don't have a lot of time for that, so I will open the call anyway, and maybe we can see if there's like one person or one question or so that we can fit in there. So I've got the call open now, and anyone have a question that you'd like to ask? I probably made you all feel rushed by saying we don't have a lot of time here, but if there's anyone with a burning question, we will make some time for it. I scared everybody away. I'm sorry about that. Let me just say one question here that might open things up, and that is, I'm thinking from what I'm hearing from you that no one is ever too old to volunteer. But assuming that we're not too old to volunteer, do you have any advice on, as we are at this glorious age that we are now, how our volunteering experiences or opportunities might change as we age?
Well, I think a lot of the volunteer opportunities you have while you're in the you know, we talk about we have three growing zones. The first growing zone is when you're a kid and it's all about I want, I want, I want. And the second growing zone is about I have to, I have to, I have to. Well, that's when you volunteer for the kids and you volunteer for Scouts and you volunteer for the church and you volunteer for Girl Scouts and you volunteer for this, that, and the other. When you get to your second blooming, again, you get to choose what you want to volunteer at. And if you've always loved the ballet may be a great place for you to volunteer to be an usher. Or to sell ads. It's about you now. In your second blooming, it's about you. So volunteer where you feel passionate. Volunteer where you want to, not where you need to because of whatever.
Excellent. I like that. It's my time. I can volunteer where I want to. I love that.
That's right. That's right.
Well, given the time, I want to say, Betsy and Diane, it's been great talking with you today, and so I want to thank you for being my guests and for the great discussion that we've had. Now, a few things that I want to remind the audience about before we go. First of all, Betsy and Diane have a free gift for you, which you can download from their website. Again, that address is www.secondbloomingforwomen.com with all the words spelled out, and it's women plural. When you get there, click on the NABBW link that's in the upper right-hand corner to download a free award-winning article, Second Blooming for Women, Cultivating a Life That Matters After 50. And certainly volunteering can fit into that life that we cultivate. Please go there and download it and do it soon because I'm not sure how long the NABBW link will be left up on their site. And, of course, the sooner you go, the sooner you'll benefit from having the chance to read that article. While you're on the Second Blooming website, be sure to sign up for the bi-monthly e-newsletter. You can also read Betsy and her co-author, Kathleen Vesta Logan's thoughts in their Facebook page as well as via their weekly blogs that are on the website. Additionally, as we've said before, Betsy and is co-author of the book, Second Blooming for Women, Growing a Life That Matters After 50. And that book is available on their website as well as through the online bookstores, Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And if you're not a person that buys books online, if you prefer to go into a store, it's available in bookstores The price is $16. Finally, if you'd like to invite Betsy or her co-author, Kathleen Vestal-Logan, to speak at your seminar, women's group, or conference, please check out their website, again, secondbloomingforwomen.com, where you'll find a comprehensive list of workshops and presentations that they offer. You'll find that, as you heard Betsy mention earlier, teaching classes in Second Blooming. Betsy and Kathleen teach Second Blooming classes in community colleges and are often guest speakers at book clubs, libraries, professional organizations, and other special events. They also have been featured on radio shows, television, and in local print media. So if you have a desire to involve your group in having the opportunity to hear from Diane, Kathleen, or I'm Betsy. Actually, I misspoke there. I meant Betsy, Kathleen, and I'm sure Diane might participate in that as well. Go to the website, and you'll find everything that you need there. I am going to thank everyone for joining us here this evening and ask our guests here if you have any last words to say before I close the call.
I think it's really important that everyone can choose at this point in their life where they would like to spend their leisure hours. And just a few hours a week in any organization could really make a big difference. If you have a few volunteers at an organization, it doesn't spread the wealth as much around. But if you have many volunteers, then more people can actively support that organization, and not just a few people doing all the work. So please consider volunteering your time at one or more, whatever you think your pace can accommodate, and give back to your community. And people have been giving back to the community for years. This is your turn to go to another level of giving back to your community, and then you're setting a good example for others to follow behind you in the future.
Excellent.
Very good,
Thank
Diane.
Thank you very much. Thanks,
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Mm-hmm.